Today, slowly, then quickly, as fear grips the property market. Hello again, it's Miles North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, suddenly the media reporting on auction clearance statistics for the weekend have changed. For example, the AFR trumpets, fear and anxiety grips auction market, with the line, Australia's East Coast dominated housing market is cooling, with more homes being offered for sale at the same time as prospective buyers grow cautious about the costs of living and rising interest rates. With the RBA now expected to lift rates on Tuesday, as the ASX rate tracker shows a 71% probability, and with markets now betting on a peak cash rate of 4.54% by the end of the year, well, we can sheet that to high inflation stemming from both Australian government policy settings and the higher bond rates, and of course, the overhang from the Iran conflict, as I discussed yesterday. Actually, now all four of Australia's major banks are forecasting the same thing, another interest rate hike coming on Tuesday. And here I want to just highlight the flaccid reporting where some journalists are claiming that banks are jumping ahead of the RBA and lifting their fixed rate mortgages before the rate decision on Tuesday. They completely misunderstand how fixed rates are actually calculated. They are based on the implied forward rate based on the current bond yields. And as you can see here, the bond yields are continuing to rise, which means that fixed rates are already going to go higher than where they are today. And for many borrowers who are looking for new loans at the moment, yes, fixed rates are much, much higher. But in a way, the Reserve Bank decision on Tuesday follows, not leads. Even Treasurer Spin Jim Chalmers said on Sunday that Australian households are likely to face increased cost of living pressures, with the inflation rate set to rise above 4.5% as the oil price climbs, and independent economist Alan Oster says at current oil price levels, headline inflation will jump above 5%. Economist Warren Hogan highlighted that in a perfect world, the central bank wouldn't be raising interest rates at a time of extreme energy, military, and geopolitical uncertainty. But for the past few years, Australia's macroeconomic policy has been flawed. What he's getting at here, of course, is that the RBA left rates too low compared to other comparable economies, and we are now caught in the middle of no man's land with higher inflation, relatively high interest rates, and higher ahead. As he said, there could not be a worse time for the Iranian war shock, an economy struggling to contain inflation, and a political economy unable to deliver the difficult policy actions that are required to ensure our future prosperity. He writes, the RBA has found itself in quite the pickle. Australia's economy needs a cash rate closer to 5% rather than the current 3.85%. if we are to have any realistic hope of controlling inflation. But then the world is on the brink. Indicators of consumer sentiment are indeed fading on the back of higher inflation expectations, and figures from the Ray White Group, the country's largest national agency, showed open home attendance numbers fell to 2.6 attendees per property, down from 3.2 just a week earlier, and 3 at the same time last year, with the average number of active bidders declined to 2.5 nationally from 2.8 the previous week. AMP Shane Oliver on X wrote, clearances are continuing to cool with rate hike talk and now a hit to confidence from the Iran war dampening buyer demand. Listings are now also running above year-ago levels. According to the Catality data, 2,871 homes were scheduled for auction in the week to Saturday, a 58% increase on the previous week, when, of course, there were public holidays in Victoria, South Australia, the ACT and Tasmania, but it also represents a 16% increase on the same week last year. Nevertheless, the preliminary auction clearance rate for the nation's capitals combined, which is based on the reported results so far, fell to 66.6% from last week's initial 72.1%, a figure, by the way, that later slumped to just 57.9% as more results came in. But if you compare the reported successful sales before, at, or after the auctions against listed count, the true clearance is around 47.8%. Catellus's research director Tim Lewis was quoted as saying, next week we should see a similar number of auctions held, with around 2,900 homes currently scheduled to go under the hammer, rising to around 4,000 auctions in the ramp up to Easter. But we'll see about that, bearing in mind the changing confidence levels. In Sydney, where the number of scheduled auctions hit 1,000 for only the second time this year, the preliminary clearance rate sank to 65.1%. That's the lowest so far this year, from the previous week's 74.3%. But again, the true clearance was around 48.5%. And Melbourne have the most auctions, with the scheduled total more than doubling to 1,389 homes from 570 a week earlier because of the holidays. The preliminary clearance slipped, though, to 66.9% from 67.9%, and it was revised down to 52.6% last week. That's the lowest since the middle of December, but the true clearance was 48.2%. In Brisbane, where the scheduled number of auctions rose to 190 from 125 a week earlier, the preliminary clearance rate fell to 65.9%, also the weakest figure so far this year from 72.1% a week earlier. And in Canberra, the number of auctions more than doubled to 118, even as the preliminary clearance rate dropped to 55.4% from 65% a week earlier. Actually, Adelaide was the only city auction market where the clearance rate lifted to 84% from 81%, even as the scheduled number of auctions rose to 155 from 107 a week earlier. But of course, it's a small market. Now, it's worth noting in passing that Domain has changed the way they present their clearance rate data, which makes it much harder to figure out what is actually going on. So I won't include their stats in this week's show. But more broadly, the slow momentum is showing up across the board as first-time buyers take a breath on the back of higher expected interest rates. Property investors readjust their expectations and portfolios, and even top-end property purchases seem to be freezing up as well. And here it's worth sparing a thought for those holding big mortgages, as rising property prices, later market entry, and frequent refinancing now extend loan terms well past borrowers reaching their 60s, according to a recent AFR article. The prospect of entering retirement with a mortgage is quickly becoming a glaring reality for more Australians. The odds of a median near-retiree household still having a mortgage balance is now roughly 50-50, according to analysis from financial services consulting firm Credair Consulting. And the Melbourne Institute's latest Household Income and Labour Dynamics in Australia survey, the HILDA survey, shows the proportion of retirees who own their own home outright dropped from 75% to 66% in the decade to 2023. And the share of those with a mortgage increased from 13% to 70%. And yes, I can tell you that data's stale, but according to my surveys, it's even worse now. Things are indeed getting worse, not better. More than one third, actually 66% of millennials, expect to carry a mortgage into retirement, according to a survey of 1,800 Australians published late last year by Vanguard. And a quarter of those millennials currently aged between 30 and 45 plan to use superannuation to clear the debt once they have access to the money, which of course is not the purpose of superannuation in the first place. If Australians are expected to retire in the traditional retirement years, how are they supposed to manage ongoing mortgage repayments if they have relatively modest super balances? It just becomes a very tough equation, said the Australian Managing Director of Vanguard. Given what we are seeing at the moment, unless the government decides to pour more metaphorical petrol on the property market by way of adding additional grants, incentives, or other tricks to support prices, we could well be facing into a significant drop in values, with consequences for individuals, families, and financial stability. So it's worth revisiting the scenarios that I went through in my earlier show, When It Hits the Fan. My scenarios are a way of exploring different futures, not a forecast. It's trying to help to show how sensitive is work And none of the scenarios may turn out to be right. Things change. And we drive that framework into the core market model. And the scenarios are running. Actually, the scenarios are running from when I ran the model last, which is a couple of weeks ago. So this doesn't include the latest oil crisis, although it's sort of hinted at. And here are my three. So my best, which is, you know, effectively, if things don't go too bad, if we stay at 3.85% and we see inflation still above target but comes down a little bit later, we have strong migration. I think migration, you've got to take account of what's going to happen to migration. We also get first-time buyer booming. We don't get a recession in Australia. And we start to get wages rising faster than inflation. So that's the best case scenario. My base case is a soft landing where you get a further rate rise of 4.1% and it holds at that point. Inflation then eases later, in line with what they said in 2028. Wages rise, but slower than inflation. But we do get a recession in Australia. Migration falls to about average. And remember, of course, that the latest GDP number was a bit stronger. But actually, if you look at it, it was driven very much by investments in data centers, amongst other things. Worst case scenario is what I call the nightmare scenario. So you see rate rises up, and we see significantly higher rate rises. Inflation steps up. Unemployment rises, wages growth stalls. We do get some rate cuts later, but migration drops below the average and we get stagflation. So this is the nightmare scenario. This is closest to what happens if we do have a continued long-term conflict in the Middle East and we have high oil prices, significant pressure on supply chains, all of those things, and we get stagflation. And it's fascinating that the number of mentions about stagflation in Australia and in other countries has gone through the roof if you do a Google search. So stagflation is now very much back in vogue as the most potentially likely scenario, given the Trump intervention in the Middle East and everything that followed from that. So we'll see. And look, those are just ways of showing how things could dynamically play out. But it is quite interesting just understanding the implications of that. And I'll show you a little bit of now my scenario. So this is the all Australian view. And you can see here that we have some growth in the best case scenario across the 3 years. I go out 36 months, so 4.5% over 3 years. The base case is a bit of a fall for houses and a more significant fall in the worst case scenario, which is, you know, showing you if things went absolutely pear-shaped, what could happen. Units follow on pretty closely, so it's pretty close. And, you know, you can pick which scenario you think is most likely, given what we know at the moment. If I look at the ACT, there is a small slide over 3 years in my scenario, a more significant fall in the base case and the worst case scenario, a more significant fall down 38%. But again, unlikely, but you know, just to understand what the downside risk could be. It's hard to see upside in the ACT at the moment with everything we're going on. And of course, jobs probably would get trimmed from the public sector in a pressurized scenario. If we look at New South Wales, small rise, 2.9% over 3 years is my base case, the best case scenario. The base case is a bit of a fall, and the worst case, a more significant fall, down a third possibly over 3 years if things went really badly over that period of time. It's unlikely, probably more likely to bounce back, but who knows. And then this shows you the units which fall, but not quite as much, but follow on pretty much. Again, if I look at the Northern Territory scenario, significant rise still. So I agree with Louis. Northern Territory looks like an upside. Baseline pressure is still there, but of course, lower base of prices. In the base case, it's harder to see a rise. And in the worst case, a bit of a fall, down 22% over 3 years. Units following on as well, pretty similarly. If I then look at Queensland prices, yep. A rise is certainly on the cards in the best case scenario, up 7.2%. The base case, small fall, down 8% over 3 years. In the worst case, a fall of 29% over 3 years. And units following on somewhat similarly. Units don't dive quite so much because there is perhaps more capacity to spend in the unit sector when prices ease. South Australia shows a growth, 9% over best case scenario over 3 years. And the base case a fall, and the worst case a more significant fall, units following on. Tasmania, hard to see much growth even in the best case scenario, so I'm a bit off where Louis is on that, but interesting to see. But again, worst case a significant fall and units following on a bit as well. And then Victorian home prices, well, Yeah, with the following wind downhill, if everything went really well, maybe over 3 years, a very small rise, but it's unlikely. I think more likely a fall. I've got 13.8% over 3 years on 35% over 3 years in the worst case scenario, and units following on. And in Western Australia, significant rise, still possible, 7.6% over 3 years is my modelling, but a fall of 7.5% in the base case and 28% in the worst case scenario with some significant falls there too. So that's the story with regard to what we're seeing at the moment. And, you know, none of this is necessarily going to become true, but it shows you some of the sensitivities that we're dealing with at the moment. And I think it's important to understand the dynamics here and to try and understand how these things can play out and what it means when you're actually making decisions. I always say to people, you know, you can't assume home prices will continue to go at the rate they've been going. There were some reasons why home prices were so strong, and that may change ahead as well. So important to understand.
Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.